communicate with each other. But afterwards, we learnt that there was a kind of ad hoc human chain sending children towards the rescue boats that were coming in via the stern. And I think when you are responsible for other people's children, this kicks in, that you've really got to, you know, do your very best. But of course, afterwards, you get really kind of a survivor shame. Did I do the best that I could? I know that I was shouting, and I was also doing a bit of swearing as well to move children, to move more quickly down steps and along the deck. And of course, that shocks children because they aren't used to teachers or adults in who are looking after them being sworn at. So that did help to move them. But afterwards, I kind of thought, what on earth am I doing? What was I doing on that day?
Simon, do you want to pick up on that?
I suppose, again, you know, my position is a little different in the sense that, you know, you're climbing, and if you're just climbing with a, you know, there is that massive sense of responsibility. Obviously, you're completely responsible for each other's lives. If you're climbing with a single climbing partner during the course of a climb, and then obviously if anything goes wrong, and I suppose there's that sort of unwritten you know, code between you that obviously you'll try and do your best within reason if something does go badly wrong, and you know, one of one of you is hurt, but there's limitations, I guess, from the environment as well that you're in. As well, that there might be situations where realistically the other person can't help you that much for whatever reason, and so there's that in the back of your mind as well. I did my best, you know. I, through the course of that day, I lowered Joe down the mountain at great personal risk to myself. I couldn't anchor myself onto the snow slope that I was lowering him down, and but I did it, you know, because I knew that, I hoped that obviously he would have done the same if the circumstance of the situation had been reversed. It's as simple as that, really.
And Gary and Mary too, you were talking about the other people around who were helping. Steve was making this point about his experience on September the 11th in New York. This notion that someone will help us, someone knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I think particularly I knew that the fire brigade wouldn't be far. It wouldn't be long before they actually turned up at the train. The first people that we actually saw were members of what was then GNER, was members of staff and a chef from the kitchen, who poked their heads over this now full ceiling and said, you know, are you OK? And it was the ladies that saying, you know, about me, no, this guy's quite badly injured. But Mary actually said something then that struck a chord with me about the guilt afterwards, because, that we haven't mentioned yet, if I may, I'll mention I was also in the Admiral Duncan nail bombing in Soho. Mm. I'm actually a double survivor, disaster survivor. And after I got out of the pub, I mean, we had to stumble out of thick black smoke, no emergency lighting, that had been destroyed completely. And then afterwards, I thought I'd seen a couple of shapes of people on the floor, and it was like, I suppose I was in absolute shock and in self-preservation mode. I didn't stop at the time, I just carried on out. I think the police were also shouting, you know, get out, to anyone that was still left inside the pub in shock, kind of. But nonetheless, afterwards, I still kind of went back over it. Could I have done more? But then the emergency services were waiting to come in by the time I got out. So I think I also had on my mind, get out of the way and let the professionals do their jobs, you know.
Worrying about what one's done afterwards. Later, when I was in the sea and debris was coming up and there was oil on the sea, there was a child which whom I couldn't reach because there was so much debris between her and myself, shouting that she couldn't swim. And this is one of the occasions when I was swearing at her and telling her that she could swim, you know, to get hold of some of the debris. And later on, she was on the plane when we came back from Athens. And I didn't recognise her, but her teacher said, this is the girl who you were swearing at. And she survived. And that was such a relief. But one of my recurring nightmares is some debris that I saw in the dark, and I don't know whether on the top of it there was a small child. Again, I couldn't help. Later on, I found from one of the accounts that a small child had actually got onto a rescue boat from some debris by standing on the shoulders of somebody who was in the water. You know, they held them up. And so I still don't know whether this, you know, this shape was actually a child or not. And that's one of the recurring thoughts that comes, you know, I couldn't help, I couldn't see the child, just a shape. And you do, even all these years later, worry about, you know, did I do the right thing? Could I do it? Or could I have done more?
And Mary, I mean, and I'll come to Gary and Simon and ask you both this question too in a moment and pick up on what Mary says. Looking at it now, would you have done anything differently?
One can't go back, so you can't tell how one would have done things differently. We had no idea that the ship was going to sink so quickly. So looking back, one can only do what one can do at that area where you are and at that time. And you can't criticise anybody who's doing things differently, because we all hope that we're going to be a perfect human being and do the right things, but we're just human, and the circumstances and the time and what's happening around you are going to alter your perceptions. So I think criticising is, it doesn't help anybody at all. And everybody also suffers from survivor guilt. Why am I alive and other people have been injured or have died? And you have to live with that as well.
Gary?
I think it's almost impossible to say whether you're doing it in different. I mean, as Mary says, you just don't know how you're going to react until you're actually in something. You hope, you know, you'll do your best, etc. I mean, it's very different to be an armchair critic of what went on the ship when you weren't actually there and being actually in a disaster. I think with the train crash, no, there's no way I could have done anything any different because I wasn't in a position to. I was trapped in a confined space with broken bones. The pub, again, it's so difficult. It's so difficult to know. I think one thing probably, I allowed myself to get swept along by the police and ended up the other side of the cordon that had been set up, when I would have liked to have probably stayed behind. I only had very minor injuries from the bombing, slightly burnt face and bruised feet from where I think the ceiling rubble had fallen on me. So could I have helped give first aid to the other victims? But I did what I was told at the time and ended up, although in hospital later that night, funnily enough, at the time I ended up the other side of the cordon. I allowed myself to be swept along.
Simon, what about you?
I think what strikes me in mind, it's a different thing. I think what I would do differently is quite clear. You know, we were both young and inexperienced, or relatively inexperienced mountaineers at that point in time. And so there was a run-up to Joe's accident. You know, we didn't eat enough, we didn't drink enough on the climb. We carried on climbing into the night and got dangerously cold doing that. This was in the preceding days, and that was why, you know, as an experienced mountaineer, I can now see that was why Joe had the accident in the first place. So, but again, you know, with any of these things, you only gain experience like that by doing the thing, and while you're gaining that experience, you're in a you're in a dangerous and vulnerable position. You know, fortunately, I lived through it. Sadly, a number of friends I've had over the years didn't sort of live through that phase, if you like, of their mountaineering careers, and that's what I draw from it. You know, I think once an accident, you know, once an incident, accident, something bad has happened, you just do your best, and that in terms of what I do, that's only, you can only do what you know your experience at that point in time enables you to do, basically.
We're listening to World Have Your Say. We're talking about the experiences of people who've survived disasters. We're talking to Simon Yates. You just heard him, who's a mountaineer. His story's documented in the film and the book Touching the Void. Gary Fellows survived not only the Hatfield train crash, but also a nail bombing outside the Admiral Duncan pub in London. And also in the studio here with me is Mary Campion, who was on the ship the Jupiter, which sank in 1988 just outside Athens. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, you can call country code 44 20 70 83 72 72 and ask any questions or make any points that you'd like to. I'm going to bring in Will now, who's on the phone from London. Will, welcome to World Have Your Say, and just tell us your story of survival.
Hi there. I was in the Mumbai terrorist attack about 3 years ago, and me and my girlfriend were staying in the Taj Hotel. We had one night, actually. We'd been in Goa for 2 weeks on holiday and were treating ourselves to a bit of luxury before we flew back the following day. And unfortunately, it happened to be the one night that the terrorists decided to storm Mumbai. Essentially, we spent 5 hours in our room thinking we were going to get shot, killed, burnt down, blown up. And eventually, when we knew that the building was essentially about to collapse on top of us through fire, we knew that we had to escape. And through our sort of ingenuity and initiatives, we sort of tied together as many kind of sheets and curtains that we tore down, anything that we could to sort of create kind of a bit of an ad hoc rope. And managed to smash the double glazing window in our room, which was about 60 feet up, and secure the homemade rope to a sort of writing table. And then after a few moments of debate, I decided to go first just to sort of test it, really. And unfortunately, after about 10 feet, even less than that, actually, my inferior knotting skills unraveled, and I fell, leaving me with a spinal injury for the rest of my life, basically.